of substantive issues in this case. If anyone would like a summary of the case we are about to hear, just raise your hand and we will give you a summary. Let me introduce the court to you all. On my far right is Justice Annette Ziegler. Seated next to her is Justice David Prosser. Justice Prosser is the justice with whom you will meet right after this case, and you will probably be joined by Albany High School. That school was here this morning in the first case. We're expecting students from the Clara Mohammed School. They have not yet arrived. When they arrive, they'll be escorted into the courtroom, so for counsel who are arguing, if you hear people coming in, most probably that is the group. But, I was introducing the court to you all, and the seat that's adjacent to mine is usually occupied by Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. She will not be participating. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. Seated next to me is Justice Patrick Crooks. Seated next to him is Justice Patience Wildensack, and on the far left, Justice Michael Gableman. I will now call our second case for today, 06AP3075, Rudy Nedvedek versus Judith, is it Kippers? Is that the correct pronunciation? Pardon me? Kippers. And before we begin argument, I would like to repeat what I said to counsel earlier. I am not an alumna of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, but I have contributed to the University of La Crosse Foundation and or whatever organization receives such contributions. And as I told counsel, I do go to their parties, which they have in Madison usually once a year, inviting UW alumni, elected officials, and friends of the UW La Crosse. And since I am a well-known party animal, I have gone to that group and did this year, indeed last night. And I asked counsel if either one of them had any objection to my sitting. I was prepared to sit because I think I can be impartial, fair, neutral, and nonpartisan on this. And also, my sitting would not have an appearance of partiality. Both counsel said they have no objection to my sitting, but I wanted them to have some time. Do you have any objection, either one of you, to my sitting? Okay, both have said no. I will be able to sit and call attorney, is it Grennison? Counsel, you're up. You represent the plaintiff, Rudy Nedvedek.
I'm attorney James Grennison of La Crosse, Wisconsin. I have been a member of the state bar for the past 50 years. I feel it is an honor and a privilege to appear before the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin for the first time. I represent Rudy Nedvedek, former commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 1530, La Crosse, Wisconsin, and Tom Hunt individually, and as president of the Vietnam Era Veterans, plaintiffs' appellants. I'm also representing the 10,000 veterans of La Crosse County, not members of these organizations, but who support, most of whom support our position. Since 2000, the Attorney General's office has maintained that if there is no meeting, how can you have a violation of the open meeting law? They feel that chancellors who are employees of the university system can act unilaterally and in secrecy in the renaming of stadiums. The Attorney General's office declares these employees are individual, government decision makers. We disagree. The question concerned by the lower courts has been, if no meetings were held regarding the renamings of Veterans Memorial Stadium, was that a violation of the open meeting law? On September 3rd, 2003, La Crosse Circuit Court Judge Damon issued a memorandum decision, and he held that open meeting laws does not appear applied to a single individual, and he ruled against us. He was very good about the problems the veterans have here, and he said on page 5 of his decision, we argue since a meeting was required but not held, it is a violation of the open meeting law. Then he went on to say that defendants have argued that the actions of the chancellors are not subject to the open meeting law because they are not governmental bodies. And he went on with the declaration of policy, you know, in recognition of representative government, you got to have fullest and complete information, etc. That's statute 1981. But he says the whole goal should be pursued by government authorities. It's when actions are taken in secrecy that concern arises. If the university had pursued this policy, perhaps we would not have this problem today. And in his conclusion, he said, the courts understand the anger and frustration to the plaintiffs by the actions of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. It is disheartening when actions of the University of Wisconsin, it is disheartening when actions are taken without public input. What he probably should have said is unlawful to take action without public input. The matter was appealed, and I think it was Bruce Olson, the Assistant Attorney General, and he mentioned in his brief that two La Crosse area veterans filed an action against Kuypers and Hostad, alleging that the actions taken by the Chancellor in renaming both the stadium and the field constituted a violation of the open public records laws. And on September 9th, he said, La Crosse County Judge John Damon held that neither the individual defendant nor the Board of Regents had violated the open meeting of public records law in connection with the naming activities. However, the Board of Regents never acted on the naming of that facilities, and it's in the bylaws of the UW that they must approve naming of facilities.
Counsel, my question is this. Let's just assume for sake of argument that the chancellor acted improperly and should have had an open meeting. What's the remedy for failure to have an open meeting? Is what happened null and void?
Well, if they fail to hold an open meeting, because the chancellors are employees of the university and they hold no public office, they have no sovereign power. And so the chancellors acting unilaterally, they're acting improperly because of their bylaws. They have to refer it to the Joint Facilities Committee, which is a governing body of UWL. And this is how Judith Kuypers did in two previous namings, which I'll refer to later on the chart. And they cannot must refer to the governing body of UWL, the Joint Facilities Committee. And that's the way she did it in 1997 when they changed the name of Main Hall to Maurice Graff Main Hall. And in 2000, the same week, in fact, the Board of Regents, after going through the UWL and to President Catherine Lyles, and then it went to the with their recommendation. All chancellors can do is recommend. They can't, name anything. They're just employees of the university. So it never went to the Board of Regents, the governing body. So they didn't act on it.
Counselor, if I agree with you, then I would say, well, the 2000 renaming, the 2001 renaming, just say I agree with you, those are problematic. But in 2005, the Board of Regents itself did a renaming. So I'm not sure that whatever we would say about 2000 and 2001 would have any bearing on our decision in this case because of that 2005 decision by the Board of Regents. Can you tell me why I shouldn't just be starting my examination with that 2005 decision?
I'm just going to get to that, but I'll just get to it right now.
Okay.
The 2005 naming was, as you know, done by Chancellor Hosted, and he never held a meeting or never referred to the Joint Facilities Committee of UWL, who has the responsibility of approving, and it's only by sending it to the Joint Facilities Committee of UWL that they can receive public input from the students, the faculty, the alumni, the public, the veterans in this case. And so again, this was a decision by Chancellor Hosted at a press conference, and he then of course could not send a resolution down to Madison to the Board of Regents, and so he had been involved with Regent Brent Smith, who I'll get to that later. He apparently just went down to Madison, and there's no resolution expressing the will of the people from UWL. And he more or less told the board that everyone supports this naming, and he moved for a waiver of the private meeting, which you have to have before the final decision, so in case someone has some bad things to say about the proposed person being renamed, that they can bring it out. So that whole thing was improper, in my opinion.
Okay, so you're saying that the matter was not properly placed before the Board of Regents in 2005.
That's
because
correct.
It didn't first go to the Joint Facilities, come out of there with a recommendation that the Regents acted.
Right. And the way the first two namings, Main Hall, Maurice Graff Main Hall now, and Wimberly Hall, North Hall, those, when Judith Kuipers referred them to the year before, to the Joint Facilities Committee, it took 8 months to go through the process, and the same with Maurice Graff, and that was fine. And they sent a slip down to having the closed meeting in May, and then they always did these things in June. So they, for some reason, all the students are gone, and no one can find out about it sometimes. So that's the reason that the Board of Regents are the governing body, and they have got to approve a naming of a facility. Suppose some far-left chancellor named the building after Karl Marx. Could he just do that on his own? So that's the whole thing there, is it? And still, I feel that When you don't set up the Joint Facilities Committee, you don't tell one person, how is this transparency? How can the blue sky law we have in Wisconsin, some states call it the sunshine law, but this is a situation.
Mr. Grennison, you had a stadium. You had a stadium. You had a field within that stadium. But it doesn't exist anymore, does it?
It's what?
It doesn't exist anymore.
Well, there's a new one. The old stadium is torn down. The new one will be dedicated June 1st of this year. And I was going to get to that because there's some confusion in the lower courts. In the appellate decision, they said they built the stadium in 1945. And then in another argument or somewhere, it says they built this stadium and then they renamed it that. And what's really important in this thing is that there was no stadium at all until 1988. There was a grandstand, and this was erected in 1924. The grandstand had nothing to do with the football field. And as I did give a picture of the...
What I'm trying to get at, and the Chief Justice may have asked this question, but whatever happened in the past, and what happened in the past might have been offensive to veterans, but whatever happened in the past, how can that be fixed now because the stadium has been torn down?
Well, no, the stadium has been torn down, but right now, when they dedicate the stadium June 1st, it's going to be called Roger Herring Stadium and Veterans Memorial Field, which means nothing to the veterans. We have a $250,000 project, what's called a monument and a Hall of Honor and that. And this was done way back in 1997. And Judith Kuipers was the instigator of this veterans monument in 1991 when she came to UWL. She said, I see there's a veterans memorial stadium here. Where's the monument at? And so she proceeded to work with the veterans, and we got this monument, which is very, very fine. And it was in Veterans Memorial Stadium, and it was called that. In accordance with the use agreement in 1988, it was Veterans Memorial Stadium until June 5th, 2000, when she went into her office and sent a memo to Larry Lubecki saying, I've decided to rename Veterans Memorial Stadium. And that memo, she didn't send anything to, there's a chain of command, and everybody reports to somebody. She reported to President Catherine Lyle. But she didn't report to anyone because she was leaving town for her job in California, and so she did not do the proper procedure. And this memo, it's a two-page memo. Too much paper.
What I don't quite understand what it is. Let's suppose everyone here wanted to side with you. So just suppose that.
Sure.
What would we do?
What would the court do?
Yeah.
One of the open meeting public records law, I had two lawsuits on this, and under that, we asked the court that it could declare it null and void, but what they put. The actions of Kuipers and Hofstede were illegal and improper. They had no sovereign power. Judy Piper and Hostad, as employees, they have no more right to name a stadium or a field than the night watchman or the janitor.
But that's so far in the past. I mean, what could we fix if we
just
were...
Just give us the name Veterans Memorial Stadium and the Hall of Honor, and it will be that for 25 years. There was still a use agreement, which I haven't got to yet.
That was on a stadium that existed. That was on a property that existed starting in, was it 40? Yeah, this is
Your Honor, I think they're tearing down Yankee Stadium, and I still feel that the new one, I'm sure, is going to be Yankee Stadium, so you give it the same name. We are happy that they are building a new stadium because the grandstand that, since it was a stadium in 1988, the use agreement and the city and the university agreed that it will be Veterans Memorial Stadium for 25 years, and it was a right to renew, and it was signed by Noel Richards and signed by the city of La Crosse, and all through these lawsuits that the city had, and we had the early one with Louis Ferris versus everybody, the Board of Regents, that was, lost my train of thought then.
This use agreement that you refer to, that wasn't presented to the trial court in this litigation, was it?
Presented to who?
The trial court, the La Crosse County Court that heard this matter when you filed the lawsuit. It was not presented to that court, correct?
The use agreement was in, very much so, it was in the city's lawsuit, and it's been with our lawsuit since day one, because this was a valid agreement between them and...
I couldn't find it in the record, Counselor. I looked. I couldn't find a copy of the use agreement in the record. So if you know where it is in the record, if you could let me know that would be fine, but I looked and I could not find it.
Perhaps it was a mistake on my part not to file, because I knew at this, and this has been this use agreement has been the whole...
I understand that's your argument, and my question to you is only, it wasn't attached to the complaint, which is where I thought it might be, and I didn't find it as an exhibit that was submitted to the trial court. There was a motion to dismiss, but the trial court did consider things outside of the pleadings, and I guess I'm asking, as part of that motion to dismiss, in response to it, did you file the use agreement with the trial court and say, hey, wait, this applies here?
The use agreement was all what this is all about from the beginning, and because our whole lawsuit was based on the fact that, one thing I should add, that from 2000, when she named it, all the way to 2004, and the Attorney General will vouch that Kuypers and Hostad, they said, we acknowledge the use agreement. That's in the record. It's in the city's lawsuit, and I've got copies of it in my appendix, and there's, you know, the use agreement is just a simple little covenant that says, for $1, the city gave $2 million of property. That was a consideration. And all they asked in return was that you keep the name Veterans Memorial Stadium for 25 years and let Aquinas and Central play football there for 25 years, and then they can renew it. And that's right in the use agreement. And it's just an oversight, because this is, I'm sure everyone knows what's in there. And although I should not have argued the third-party beneficiary and all that without it in there, but I...
Right, and that's why I was looking for it, to see what it said, and to see, in order to be a third-party beneficiary, it not only has to benefit the veterans, but they have to be a contemplated beneficiary of the parties to the agreement. So I was looking to read it, and I couldn't find it.
I'm sorry. So is my time up?
No, you have about 4 more minutes left. Your time will be up when the red light goes on.
Just 1 second, then.
That's all right.
I did want to get to the due process. They mentioned that that we had no basis for a due process argument, that we didn't suffer property or liberty loss. The fact that the university's own policies was not followed constitute a violation of procedural due process, which flows from both the Fifth and the 14th Amendments. Due process clauses of the Constitution. That veterans were deprived of both liberty and property by those actions. Minimal procedural due process is that parties whose rights are affected are entitled to be heard. In order to enjoy that right, they must be notified. And this is what the public record open meeting law is all about. And if they're not notified by the newspapers, or the newspapers are not notified, everyone is kept in the dark as what is going on. And so that they have a right to have their field name, Roger Herring Stadium. But under our democracy and parliamentary law, which I think I didn't get to that yet, but that was that's more a violation by unilaterally acting than the other. And the procedural due process confers a right to be heard rather than a right to ultimately prevail. Only the courts have the expertise on the question of what procedural safeguards are needed to ensure fair treatment. Violation of open meeting and public records laws are procedural due process claims. It is not only the veterans, but everyone in the public who is denied a right to be heard. When the new stadium is completed in June 2009, there will also be added a Hall of Honor, the names of other veterans who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Under the Congressional Charter, the purpose of the Veterans of Foreign War is to preserve and strengthen comradeship among its members, to assist worthy comrades to perpetuate the memory and history of our dead, to maintain true allegiance of the government of the United States of America, and fidelity to its constitutions and laws, and to foster true patriotism, and to preserve and defend the United States from all our enemies, whomsoever. We request the court decide that the new stadium be known as, and it remains, really, because it's never been changed, Veterans Memorial Stadium. Thank you.
Well, thank you, counsel, and I'm glad you read the statement you did relating to the veterans of foreign war in the meaning of the memorial stadium. Thank you. I will now call on Assistant Attorney General Creron, who will argue on behalf of the defendants, including Judith Kuipers. Mr. Creron is having a big day. He argued the first case, too, today, and so you'll change your line from the Department of Revenue to the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse.
May it please the court, as the court well knows, I am Assistant Attorney General Thomas Creron, and I represent the Board of Regents of the University of Wisconsin System. A former president of the system, and former Wisconsin La Crosse chancellors that are defendants in this action. I think Attorney Grennison is to be commended for having his first argument before the court today after practicing law for 50 years. And I think that Attorney Grennison has doggedly pursued this issue for many, many years. I don't think that he represents 10,000 veterans that that he speaks for 10,000 veterans, or that he speaks for any more than the two or possibly only one individual plaintiff in this case. As the court is well aware from reading the sequence of events that has occurred here, the university has named the football field and surrounding acreage Veterans Memorial Field. As far as the university is concerned, this was done with consultation with veterans groups. They're very happy with that. We think this is an individual issue being pursued by Attorney Grunison. I also want to clarify, before I begin, a couple of factual points that I'm really not sure are clear. I think Attorney Grunison is saying at the beginning in 1945, there was a football field and there was a grandstand. And that means there was no building there at all. Another point I want to clarify just factually is this isn't a stadium like Camp Randall, where the football field is inside the stadium. The stadium is on one side of the football field. A third thing I want to clarify, and I certainly agree that the Hall of Honor and the Veterans Monument are very important items, very important to veterans. But just so it's absolutely clear, they weren't there until the university acquired a decrepit facility and got together with veterans groups, remodeled what was an open area to make the Hall of Honor, which, as Attorney Grunison said, will now be expanded in the new stadium, and built the university, facilitated the erection or construction of the Veterans Monument.
I want to kind of get you back to the legal issues that are here rather than some of that history. I had some concerns when I was preparing for this case about interpretation of the 1988 agreement to see if I would conclude that standing could be based on third-party beneficiary status under that agreement. Though the agreement is in things that have been provided to the court, I could not find it in the record, so I'd like you to let me know whether the agreement, in your view, is or is not part of the record.
It is not.
So, all right, that answers my question. Thank you. So what's your position, Mr. Creron, on the open meeting law? Let's start with that.
The open meetings law doesn't require that meetings be held. It requires that proper notice be given with respect to those meetings that actually are held, and that those meetings be conducted in certain ways. For instance, there are certain requirements if a body wants to go into closed session.
Suppose the court would say the open meeting law covers this. What's the remedy under the open meeting law? If the meeting should have been open, it wasn't open. What's the penalty?
It's voidable but not void.
Right, and who brings the lawsuit?
The lawsuit can be brought by a district attorney, by the attorney general, or by a private person in what's often referred to as a public attorney general capacity.
But here, does the record show that the DA was asked to bring a lawsuit?
I don't believe the record in this case shows that. Attorney Grunison brought a previous open meetings and public records lawsuit where the district attorney was asked.
Mm-hmm. But that's not before us.
No.
And what happened with that lawsuit?
He was unsuccessful in making these same open meetings and public records claims that he continues to make today.
So the court did not declare it void.
The court not only did not declare it void, but said that there was no violation of the open meetings and public records laws.
Okay, what's another issue that the plaintiff is relying on? What's your response to it?
Well, another issue that the plaintiffs are relying upon is they're saying that Board of Regents policies have the force of law, and therefore the Regents cannot deviate from those policies unless they hold a meeting to change the policy. And our position is Board of Regents policies are not like administrative rules and do not have the force of law. They are simply procedures for the conduct of Board of Regents meetings.
Counselor, I assume that you have seen this 1988 agreement, and I'm wondering, in order to decide whether there's third-party beneficiary status and thus standing under that agreement, can I make that decision without reading the agreement, or do I have to interpret the agreement to answer that question?
I think you have to interpret the agreement to answer that question, and one of the points we make in our brief is if such an agreement were in the record, it would be a claim for specific performance of a contract, and the state hasn't waived its sovereign immunity yet with respect to claims for specific performance under contracts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Now, if I read this properly, there were meetings between UW-LaCrosse and veterans groups and the community. What were the results of those meetings relating to the naming here?
I don't think there is anything about those meetings in the record.
And don't bother. Well, tell me then, how there's going to be a naming ceremony in June, is that correct?
This is the first I've become aware of that, but I don't dispute that.
And you don't know what the names will be given to these areas, or do you?
The name will be Roger Herring Stadium.
And will there be anything about veterans in the fields?
Yeah, the football field and the surrounding complex is right now called Veterans Memorial Field, and will still be called Veterans Memorial Field.
Okay. What do you think is your weakest argument, Mr. Freeland? It's a new question for me.
I'm really not sure what the weakest argument is, but the one that the court has never decided and that we are interested in seeing addressed to deal with the type of repetitive litigation that we have here is whether, if a case is brought by someone in their capacity as a public attorney general, and that would be an open meetings or a public records case, whether new plaintiffs should not be barred from bringing the same open meetings and public records cases because those earlier cases were in fact brought in a public rather than a private capacity. So that with respect to the issue, it's been decided as to the public in the first litigation.
What would this be, claim preclusion?
It would be a type of claim preclusion. We did cite two cases from other jurisdictions that we believe have reached conclusions similar to this. One is Roberts versus Goldner, 397 Atlantic 2nd 1090, which is a 1999 decision by the New Jersey Supreme Court, and Rheinsberger versus Dairyman's Fertilizer, 266 Cal F 2nd 269, which is a 1968 decision of the California Court of Appeals. But You know, if there's a theme that emerges from this case for these cases, is that at some point, repetitive litigation has to stop. You know, even if Attorney Grunison were right about everything, and even if he were right that the name of the stadium, because of the use agreement, which is not in the record, that the name of the stadium has to be Veterans Memorial Stadium, I don't see any conceivable theory or any conceivable reason why the university couldn't simply just then name the football field and surrounding acreage Roger Herring Field. It's not a building. There's no university policy that applies to it. These naming decisions can be made by local chancellors. It's amazing that we've gotten this far when you consider that fact. You know, one final irony, and I don't really have anything more to add, but naming the a portion of facilities after Roger Herring is not done selfishly on the part of the university. It has a tangible benefit in that Roger Herring was a very popular football coach, and naming something after him is a very significant aid in allowing the university to raise funds for athletic facilities at UW-La Crosse, which facilitated the building of the new stadium. So, the circumstances of this suit, in my opinion, are ironic, if not amazing. We would urge the court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision.
On the same grounds?
On the same grounds, we would be interested if the court were to reach the public attorney general issue.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal, Mr. Grunison.
I'll have to be quick on this. Assistant Attorney General Cochran mentions the use agreement. I know my use agreement was in the amicus curiae brief in the appendix, and I know it was in some of the other appendixes. And the counsel is a little disingenuous when he talks about this use agreement, because I've read through all the city's lawsuits, and he was maintaining that it wasn't a condition subsequent, that it was a something else, it was a covenant, it was a use. And of course, unfortunately, the city of La Crosse went into this on the deed matter, and you know, once you deed something, that's it. And the use agreement was maybe been an afterthought a few days, and they put this together, and it's certainly we're the third-party beneficiaries, and ab initio, as the court said in 1903. The other thing is on the four namings, Kuiper's, her memo, and she sent a memo only, and she said that they didn't abide by 96.1, which is their the resolution that says that it's a building, and continually, the university and council attorney generals says that the stadium is an amenity. And an amenity is, Camp Randall Stadium is not an amenity. I've been in claims work for 50 years, and on property claims, you have building and contents. I wouldn't know what to look for if they said go out and adjust this amenity. Amenity city is something that makes it something more attractive. In lacrosse in the 30s, realtors advertised indoor plumbing as an amenity, and gradually with the end of outhouses, now swimming pools are amenities. The namings of Kuiper's Hostel in 2005 were by press conference and memo. There was no meeting, though Robert's Rules of Order, which is a big violation here because everyone has the right to be heard under Robert's Rules of Order. So you could decide this on Robert's Rules of Order almost because there was no meeting. And he still has not addressed the issue. Are the chancellor's employees or are they public officials? Do they have any sovereign power?
My problem is the use agreement, which I started talking to you about. And even if I give you that it means exactly what you said, and even if I give you that it doesn't physically have to be part of the record, you have to pray for specific performance of that agreement. And I could read your pleadings, which I just looked at again. If you declare these earlier actions null and void, then you're back where you were before, so you get the name you want. So I understand what you want to do. But the state, you're going to be asking us to force the state to do something. And there is a doctrine called sovereign immunity. And even if I agreed with everything you said, unless the state says, yes, you can sue me for specific performance of this agreement, that agreement really is subject to us.
The use agreement was just an afterthought with us. Our whole thing was always based on public records and open meeting law. So that we thought it was a shortcut things by seeing that it's still valid. And the chancellor's, so 2004, said, yeah, we know there's a use agreement. So that's still valid. And so under Kuiper's Hostel and under namings, and of course, Prince Smith injecting himself where he had a conflict of interest here. And he is the only proponent, and that resolution was really nothing in 2005.
Okay. All right.
Even a democracy, you know, and chancellors, no chancellor can act unilaterally on anything. The only chancellor in the 20th century that acted unilaterally in all things died in a bunker in Berlin in April 1945. The veterans should be honored and not outstanding coach on the name in the stadium. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. And thank you, Mr. Grennison, and thank you, Mr. Creeran, for your discussion and arguments today. In another case involving the university system. That concludes our hearing on 06-AP-3075, Rudy and Nedvedek versus Judith Kuipers. The court's in recess until 1:30. The students from Albany High School are outside waiting to come in. And Justice Prosser will be out momentarily to talk with the students. Anyone who wishes to remain is welcome. We are in recess.